WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Good evening, and welcome. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will guide you until 8 p.m. this evening. So we usually have a lineup of folks here to provide conversation, discussion. We kick things off right after traffic. Of course, we'll start, I should be sure, before I give you any details about traffic. Joining me as my co-host this evening is Mr. Richard Rosen.
How are you, Kevin?
Proud sponsor of Monday Night Talk until he hears the opening.
Well, I'm a sponsor of Monday Night Talk.
A sponsor of Monday Night. Oh. Until he hears the open, he's like, you got to change the open.
The open's got to be changed.
It's got to be changed. It's got to be more Richard
Rosen. Sure that there are so many people listening to us right now shaking their head yes.
Yeah.
They agree with me.
Yeah. It's just, I hate to say it, but life is, I wish we had like, you know, like 30-hour days instead of like 24. I need more time in a day. Don't you feel that way?
Yeah, every day of the week. But the good news is at least it's still light out.
Yeah. I mean, look at it. It's, you know.
I know.
Going at 6:15. Oh, well, of course, I'm looking at a clock that still needs to be tended to from this weekend.
I might be able to stay up later than like 8:30 now.
Good stuff.
I know.
Yeah, we're going into... The only thing that's disappointing is by the time we get that robust daylight until like 8:30, 9 o'clock, it starts heading back the other direction in June.
Well, let's hope that they change the law and we stay in daylight savings time.
You're still going to have the...
Yeah, but... It'll be better.
Okay, good to know. But Richard Rosen not only going to be serving as my co-host for the evening, but also he'll do a segment. We always catch up with him to find out what's going on in the restaurant business. He owns two fantastic restaurants. He's a businessman. He owns also a great real estate agency here on the South Shore, and we've had him in to talk about that. But we'll talk about not only McGuigan's Pub. Everybody's time of your favorite time of year is right around the corner. Maybe we can kind of tease anything you might have in the works or just whether you can come and get some of the best corned beef on the South Shore.
We can do that.
Okay, good. So Richard will be on. We'll have Richard. He'll have his own segment around 6:40. But prior to that, State House Report with State Senator Suzanne Moran. She is our guest. And we'll chat with her about a couple of different things to find out how things are going with her committee assignments, latest legislation. This actually interests me, and I know that she's someone who's kind of one of the committees she serves on is consumer protection. Is some legislation that's in the works. So that has been, I believe it's that it's moving along to strengthen the state's lemon law, and knowing that. Recently I was part of a purchase for a vehicle. It's very interesting as to some of the the process that you have to go through to buy and purchase a car in the hoops you have to jump through. We'll also talk with her in regards to a bill regarding discharging radioactive materials. As we know, Holtec is overseeing the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station's deactivating that. And there's been questions as to them putting contaminated water in and around Plymouth. So we'll chat with her about that. Hour number two, we have Richard McKinnon. Richard is a Whitman firefighter, but he's also the president of the Professional Firefighters of Massachusetts. We'll chat with him in regards to, maybe you've seen it, about a week or two ago, there were some lawsuits that were filed by firefighters who have been affected by the chemicals that their gear is treated with, their turnout gear. We'll chat with him about that. We're also going to speak with State Rep James Hawkins, who is going to give us details as to this legislation. I believe this is the second or third time that this legislation has been put through, and I think it has made it through the process. We'll chat with him about that. And then we'll close things out with none other than Dave Wedge, a best-selling author. Talk with him about his new book, Riding with Evil. So we'll do that all in just a couple of moments.
Hey, it's Geoff. That's what my friends call me, Geoff, 6'1", 190. I grew up on the South Shore, and now I live on the South Coast. Trust me, I'm not the person you think I am. I'm just like you. I have two little girls that are the same as yours. My wife and I go to work while they go to school, just like you. We watch reality TV and participate in social media, just like you. Mal keeps the books while I move things, pick things up, and put things down. Our friends are just like us. We all just want to live, work, and play freely. Thank you to the brave men and women who gave their lives. Thank you to the brave men and women who are currently giving their lives. Thank you to the brave civil servants that are serving our country every day. Thank you to the truck drivers and all of the workers that keep this country going. You are my heroes. You are amazing. You keep doing what you're doing, and we'll keep doing what we're doing. As long as we can, forever and ever, until death do us part. Like you, we stand with Ukraine. Like you, we stand for freedom. Our hearts and our prayers go out to all the people around the Ukraine. Godspeed. This message was brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Good to hear from Geoff again. A little bit more relaxing. Joining us right now for the State House Report is none other than our state senator, Suzanne Moran. Senator, how are you?
Oh, great, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
How is everything going for you since we talked? I think the last time we talked was around Christmas time.
Oh, that's right. Well, the biggest thing, in terms of day-to-day, is that the State House is open, and it's really just bubbling with activity. You know, I've seen the tours, and we're really excited because since I was elected really right after, right before the shutdown, and really had about 1 or 2 days in the State House before the COVID shutdown, I'm excited to be meeting with people in the State House.
So just so you know, Senator, I have Richard Rosen. He's a sponsor of the show, but he's also co-hosting this evening. He actually has a segment that's following him as well. So he may pop on and be a part of the conversation as well.
I think
I want to kind of open things up and talk a little bit about some of the committees and some of your committee assignments. And maybe what is there one particular committee that has some legislation that's moving along or that you're having hearings that might be to the liking of your constituents?
Well, I'm privileged to chair the Consumer Protection and Public Licensure Committee. And the reason I think your listeners will be interested is because it deals with day-to-day issues that are common to a lot of folks. We had about 20 public hearings and reviewed about 325 bills. We also had the very first roundtable right in Plymouth. And so that was a discussion about restaurants and really looking at outdoor dining. So that's going to continue. But just one example of the sort of regulatory aspect that we've been moving ahead, you might have heard, especially during COVID, about some kind of shady contractor issues that people were dealing with.
Yep.
I mean, it's hard enough to get contractors, and now consumers were really complaining that there were renovations that were left undone, money paid, contractors disappearing. And so my committee is looking at and moving ahead with requiring contractor applicants to disclose previous judgments or awards against them or revocations and suspensions in other states so that we can close that loophole where we have, you know, folks that are practicing and we just don't have an idea and can't keep track of their background. And then we're looking to also, as the second piece of that, close the loophole ineligibility for partial reimbursement so that it would also include condo owners. So those are two of the big issues. We're dealing with other things, Lemon Law, gym memberships, you know, many things that that people have really been, you know, either hurt by or penalized by, as, you know, coming out of the pandemic more so than even before.
Could we tease a little bit about, you mentioned the Lemon Law. Has there been some updates to the Lemon Law when it comes to going to purchase a car or have repairs or financing? Because just a little disclaimer, I was part of going around shopping for a new vehicle for my significant other, and it was interesting to find out what a dealer can do. Actually, there was a new fee that was mentioned. I know that there's a fee that can be charged if you, let's say, you pick out that car and you like it, it drives good, but then this is like, you're like, all right, so on the window it says $13,999. Well, of course, you know, you got to pay sales tax. But then they get this thing called processing fees, and every place has a different amount that they charge you for processing fees. It can be anywhere from $400 all the way up to $800. That's not a surprise to me. What was a surprise to me is that one particular dealership here in the South Shore, I will not name it, but they are within a 20-mile radius of Marshfield, and a well-known dealership, that they actually charge you a fee to prep your car. There's like a $300 fee to prep your car, to clean it up and get it ready. And I'm like, well, you put that on me as the person who's buying it? So what are some of the things that are this particular update to the Lemon Law, does it deal with something like that, or is it just strictly being forthcoming when it comes to financing and repairs?
Well, it doesn't go on the line items, but that's, you know, something that's very concerning, and we're not done with this issue yet. The focus of the recent amendments to the used vehicle warranty law, they include things like extending the time to return the car if it fails inspection after purchase. It extends the warranty to a higher mileage, and it increases the amount auto dealerships are required to maintain a surety bond for in terms of claims. And then it also branches out into leased vehicles and permits consumers the right to notice an opportunity to cure default before the vehicle is repossessed, which wasn't a part of the law before. That being said, there are consumer disclosure laws that require that the consumer know exactly what they're being charged before they make the deal. And so these are things that if people have experiences like that where they question, you know, whether something was right, the Attorney General's office is the contact to make directly in terms of complaint. And I would be very happy to provide more information on that if people want to contact me.
Yeah, I mentioned it because I saw on your Twitter account, on your office's Twitter account, you kind of championing the cause of the upgrade to the Lemon Law, and that you're kind of happy to see that there were some provisions put in place to strengthen the Lemon Law, especially when it comes to being a consumer these days.
Yeah, we've got to really be, you know, what happens is, you know, every time we think we tighten the laws for consumers, somebody's out there trying to make a better mousetrap and really trying to skirt, you know, within sort of the any cracks that we find in the legislation. And the reason I like to be on this committee is I practiced as an attorney in this area for years. And as these complaints come to the light of day, We're right after calling the licensing folks, as well as in conversation with the Attorney General, to look at whether there's need for a legislative change or whether it's an enforcement issue.
I believe that my co-host wants to ask the next question. Richard?
Good evening, Senator. How are
Hello,
you?
Hello, Richard.
How are you?
Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. So I understand that you're involved in a bill against discharging radioactivity materials from the nuclear power station. I'm curious what the status of that plant is right now.
So the Nuclear Decommissioning Citizens Advisory Panel right in Plymouth had a meeting where it was announced that there would be radioactive discharge potentially coming right into Cape Cod Bay as one of the options that Holtec, which is a private company, was exploring. So the federal delegation, along with my office leading the way, went to start looking at permits and really demanded from Holtec that no nuclear waste be put into the bay. What happened as a result of that outrage from citizens and legislators is that Holtec promised not to discharge waste in 2022. But that's no guarantee that the company would not discharge radioactive waste after 2022. So I immediately convened legislators on both sides of the canal, meaning the Cape Cod side as well as the Plymouth side, and I hosted a meeting with the federal delegation along with the Mass Department of Public Health and the Attorney General's Office of Massachusetts and the Department of the EPA to discuss what possible radioactive dumping could be at risk here and the necessary oversight that should be really sort of heightened while Holtec is contemplating this. And it was an opportunity to discuss the settlement agreement that Holtec had with the Mass Attorney General and identify potential areas for further action. So we're not going to just sit idly by and let the days tick ahead. We're starting really increased oversight, and I have filed several bills. One is to prevent the discharge, and by that I mean if you fail to comply with the mandate, if the bill is passed against discharging radioactive material into coastal or inland waters, fines from $10,000 to $25,000 per offense are going to be instituted. There's also a similar bill that was filed by Representative Cutler and Lenatra. And then I've also filed bills regarding emergency planning and also for that the decommissioning should be in a format that improves the public trust. And so it's a watchdog view that we're taking on Holtec's final steps that they've proposed in Plymouth.
Now, what kind of teeth are in the legislation? Anything that can, I think you mentioned as far as there could be fines, right? Now, who will be in charge of keeping an eye on Holtec's activities? Is it the decommissioning committee? Is it the residents? Is it the towns?
Certainly, the decommissioning committee and the residents could make a complaint, because what the legislation contemplates is that for each and every offense, it would be $10,000 to $25,000,
right,
and damages for any person or entity. And it would be, in all likelihood, the Attorney General that might bring that action.
So has this bill made it through the process? Is it just an amendment? Where do things stand?
Right now, it's headed to committee. There's been a hearing on Rep. Cutler and Lenatra's bill, which is similar but has a lower fine, and I expect a hearing coming up fairly quickly on my Senate filing as well.
And what kind of support have you received on this? Are you receiving support from colleagues who aren't necessarily coastal communities?
Well, I'll tell you, Senator Sear has signed on. He's a Lower Cape Senator, and, you know, the when you look at a nuclear disaster, it can certainly travel. There are representations through Iceland, through, I mean, it's very dangerous. Materials can go far, and so we do have the hearing time coming up. We don't know what the date is, but there'll be opportunities to sign on between now and then, and we're actively looking for sponsors right now.
Let's talk a little bit about the state Senate itself. My understanding is that there's been some work that's being done by the Senate to try to reduce prescription drug costs. What exactly is being done? Is this a matter of having conversation with pharmaceutical companies to see if they would reduce what the costs are, or where is this at?
The Senate has passed a bill that's called the PACT Act, P-A-C-T mm-hmm. Act, and it really addresses those issues that you're talking about, high prescription drug prices, and what it does is it provides a process to identify the thresholds for the pricing that propose a general public health risk, and where there is a decrease in patient access to necessary medications. For example, it caps the copay for insulin at $25 for a 30-day supply, and people have been, you know, forced to take a choice between heating and getting their insulin. This is between, you know, getting, you know, their meals and buying food and getting their insulin. What this bill does, it addressed this the challenge for marginalized communities who are really disproportionately impacted, older folks who really have been struggling with the basic human needs for these medications that allow us to live healthy lives. There's a lot of oversight that's put into these pharmacy benefit managers who basically price drugs on these insurance plans. And what it does is it tries to bring more transparency to taking significant steps as far as mail order prescription options, people being able to get prescription drugs from the pharmacies that they choose. It's a very consumer oriented bill, and right now it's as I said, it passed in the Senate and it's moving to the House for consideration.
I guess it's something to keep an eye on. Now, hopefully the House will take it and not make any too many modifications, right?
Right. Hopefully, but if that does happen, and if there are, you know, there were a few amendments in the Senate, if it also happens that the House has some changes, and that with the changes the bill passed, the two competing House and Senate bills would be brought in committee and with House Ways and Means, and there would be a conversation and sort of mediation about a final bill coming out of committee.
As we wrap up, we're speaking with State Senator Suzanne Moran. Anything you want to touch upon before we let you go and say goodbye?
I just really want to thank all those first responders, the folks in the hospital, police, fire, teachers, everyone who has put themselves out there for our community, and really, you know, recognize your strength and your courage, and none of that will be forgotten, even though it looks hopefully like we are vaccinated, we're through the worst of COVID, and looking forward to a good spring and you know, getting people back to their normal routines.
Well, we want to thank you, Senator, for joining us as always, as being a part of the regular rotation of state senators and state representatives that come on the radio program to kind of talk about, provide updates as to what they're working on.
Thanks for WATD and you, Kevin, for doing that. Really appreciate the working with the delegation and getting the word out there.
Until next time.
Thank you.
You got it.
Bye, gentlemen.
Good night.
All right, so we're going to step aside, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Richard Rosen.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, we return, and this is the sponsor segment of Monday Night Talk as we give Richard Rosen an opportunity to talk a little bit about two of the things that he created in downtown Whitman, McGuigan's Pub. And then, not too long later, decided to open up the patio at McGuigan's. How goes the battle?
Well, as you know, it's been a battle. The pub, we've been there 12 years already, doesn't seem possible. And the patio, we opened in May of 2019, and we had to close 2 years ago Wednesday night, which was March 16th, 2020. We had to close because of COVID. I remember standing there with a bunch of people standing around as everybody started panicking about the unknown and watching the governor on TV talking about it. And, you know, I'm standing there watching him going, we're going to have to close tomorrow, which was our busiest day of the year. Historically, St. Patrick's Day is our busiest day of the year, so we closed. We closed the patio for a number of months. But the pub, we stayed open the entire pandemic. We kept 13 people on the payroll and did an amazing takeout business.
Love the takeout.
The takeout was big.
I would usually do takeout once or twice a week.
Yeah, and you know, it was amazing how generous people were to the staff. So, you know, obviously we kept the kitchen crew, and then we started the managers working down, and I'm pretty proud of the fact that we stayed open and kept 13 people in payroll for the whole pandemic.
So here we are 2 years later, and the word is, what some people are saying is that it's behind us. I just be skeptical, but...
So, my guess, and I'm the world's biggest optimist, I believe it's behind us, at least for now.
Mm-hmm. Next couple of months, anyway.
People are out. Spoken as a true pessimist that you are. People are out. People want to spend money.
Yep.
People have had enough. They've been inside for 2 years. And I'm still seeing people once, twice a week that have not gone out in 2 years. They haven't gone into a restaurant. They haven't gone into anywhere for a couple of years. But, you know, you could see it coming gradually. And then it was that whole Christmas Omicron virus craziness where everybody had COVID. Mm. And then it kind of just petered off. And now nobody has COVID to speak of, and people are out, and most of them aren't wearing masks. As you know, I was like the COVID Nazi when we reopened. I mean, we reopened the patio a few months later. I was paying $185 a month to rent a pod to store half my furniture from both places.
Wow.
And after so many months, I said, I'm just going to go buy a unit, which I did, and we still have some furniture in there. But I believe, for all intents and purposes, whether or not it's actually over, people believe it's over.
Mm.
And the good weather's here, and they want to get out, and they want to spend money. And I'm glad, because business is screaming at our restaurants. And I think that you'll find that most everywhere, that restaurants are I'm not going to say doing well, but they're busy.
I think the one thing that I was intrigued with when you first rolled it out, and but then you had to take it down, was the annual holiday tree.
It's still there, you know.
I mean, I know it's still there, but I'm saying is, you know,
well,
it's
we did take it down.
It's kind of, yeah, you took it down when you had to, you know, deal with regulations as to how far apart folks had to be, and you had to optimize the space that you had, and then of course the tree had to go away. But you know, this year it was back. It's fantastic. It's got to be decorated with green stuff on it now, right?
For those listening, yes. What you're referring to is our 18-foot Christmas tree that then became a Valentine's Day tree that then became the St. Patrick's Day tree.
Right.
It is now a St. Patrick's Day tree.
That's why I call it the annual holiday tree.
It's coming down.
All the different holidays throughout the year that you can adorn decorations on it. And I think people kind of embraced it.
People loved it. And, you know, it's amazing. People come in and they want to take pictures in front of it with their kids or whatever. But we'll leave it up for another several days. And it's coming down because we need the space.
Well, if we supposedly are looking in the rearview mirror at the pandemic, and it's more leaning towards an endemic, your signature is just to be creative. You find different ways to modify your restaurants or bring in guests. And so what are you doing for St. Patrick's Day? Are you doing anything fantastic?
So let me just back up a little bit and say, you know, when we've talked, when I talk in schools, wherever I talk, I always talk about in business, you need to be flexible.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I talk about that, you can't be rigid or you're going to go out of business. But when I always talk about that, I mean, like, you know, if you have a business plan, you need to roll the punches. But never in my life did I think you would have to do that every day of the week. I mean, I was referring, you know, a couple times a year, you'd have to change your menu, change the way you do things. I mean, we were changing the way we do business every day, and sometimes twice a day, based on trying to keep up with the craziness of the world. So now to answer your question, St. Patrick's Day will just be crazy and both places. We have several hundred pounds of corned beef and cabbage waiting to be cooked and served starting Thursday, and I think we'll run it for a couple of days. If you go into the back hall of the pub right now, I don't know how many kegs of Guinness there are lining the hallway, because and the walk-in cooler is full of the corned beef and cabbage, the corned beef and more kegs of Guinness. So,
if there is a Guinness shortage, we know who to turn to.
No, there is a Guinness shortage. There's a shortage of everything. We couldn't get...
It's crazy.
We could not get... It is crazy. We couldn't get...
Carrots?
I don't know about carrots. I wish it was a shortage of turnip, which would be fine. There is a shortage of Guinness because we couldn't get all that we ordered. And when my daughter Danielle, who runs the restaurants, would call the representative, he's like, I don't know if I can get it for you because there's literally a shortage. And there's also a shortage now of beer that's sold in aluminum cans because there's an aluminum shortage. And there's a shortage of everything. But we are going to have Maureen Haley's Irish Step Dances.
Of course.
Twice in both places. They're going to be up in the afternoon, and then they go to 35 other places, and then the kids will be back at night. And we've got music in both places. I mean, nothing crazy. Unfortunately, I started late in the game to try to get some bagpipers, and there's only so many of those around.
Shortage of bagpipers.
And, yeah, but they're all
booked.
This
is the shortage show.
Yeah, it's like crazy. But it'll be a fun day, and the weather's supposed to be nice, so I think we may open the windows in both places.
Yeah, you can do that now.
We opened them, in the last Friday. We opened them in the patio. And I don't know, we had a huge lunch in the patio on Friday, and I think some of it had to do with the fact the windows were open. So it's supposed to be nice, so if it's nice, we'll open the windows in both places. And I know one of your favorite things might return soon.
Really? Yeah, and I'll tell you what the favorite thing is there's nothing better than after church going to the patio to have brunch. Are you saying that there's a chance it could return?
There's a very good chance.
Okay.
I'm not sure how soon, but you know, we stopped doing brunch because during, I think we started brunch like 3 days before the pandemic.
The Bloody Mary shortage, right?
There's a Bloody Mary, celery. There's a celery
That's
shortage.
What it is.
But we only had a chance to do it for several weeks before the pandemic, and it just became more problematic, so I temporarily suspended it, but it is coming back in the near future. Again, you know, we need help, and help in the kitchen, help period, there's a shortage. There's a shortage of help.
Is it still something that with a lot of business owners, especially when it comes to restaurants, that finding staff to, whether it's someone to be a maitre d' or to wait tables or to be a short order cook, are you talking to other restaurants and finding that everybody's having the same problem across the board?
Everybody's having the same problem. Mostly it's line cooks. Yeah, there's a real problem finding line cooks, and we're having that same problem. And in the meantime, you're overworking the staff that you currently have. But hopefully it will break. We're in pretty good shape with respect to waitresses. We just had a couple of more people. We needed some managers, so we just hired a couple people. We promoted a couple of in-house people. But the whole world is crazy. It isn't just the restaurant business. It's everything. The world is upside down, and unfortunately, we have to deal with it and roll with it again every day of the week.
Now, depending on what happens moving forward over the next couple of months, and if we steer clear and our COVID numbers remain low, I mean, do you have plans for as far as any updates to the menus? I mean, usually May and June is lobster roll season.
Oh, yeah, we seasonally, I mean, regardless, we'll be changing the menu. The Guinness beef stew, which is homemade from scratch in the restaurant, will be coming off. And when the weather gets a little bit better, generally around Memorial Day, we start bringing in our world-famous lobster roll in both places. So, yeah, there'll be some menu changes, more summer stuff, more, you know, fried seafood and stuff like that. Always the comfort food in the pub. But the lobster roll will be back.
Now, as you said, you're starting to see more and more people. They're coming in, and they want to get out. Entertainment, also one of those things that has
boring
people.
So, we because of the lack of space and the fact that people, you know, didn't want people singing in there.
Singo?
We have Singo. We kill it on Wednesday nights. Singo is unbelievable. We have a huge following on Wednesday nights. It's also half-price pizza in the pub.
Of course.
But we now have entertainment in both places, both Friday night and Saturday night. And we changed our entertainment. It used to be 9 to midnight, but things changed during the pandemic. And it sounds crazy. People don't stay out as late as they used to. They really don't. So we noticed that there was, you know, a fall off in the crowd. So we changed the entertainment from 8 to 11, which also gives me the opportunity to see him because I never stayed there till 9.
Right.
I'm one of those that would have to come and go to bed. But no, we entertainment both places, both nights. And we've been killing it lately. I mean, people seriously want to go out. They want to spend money. Sunday, the patio was featured on Phantom Gourmet, friends of ours.
What is that like?
It is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know the Entlemans. I know the Entlemans. Yeah. And they taped at the pub a number of years ago. And even being friends with them, it took me 4 years before I was on their show. People think it's like pay to play, which it's not. But they did the patio. I forget what month it was. We were in the pandemic when they filmed it.
Yeah.
The business that they drive is amazing.
Yeah, and that was just initially when they were there doing a lot of the you know, the beauty shots and you know, grabbing a different video from around the building.
Yeah,
you had, you know, the host Dan, who was kind of, he was doing, you know, social media drops. You know, hey, look at this.
He was doing a live Facebook while he was taping the show, and our phone was literally ringing, wanting to know our hours. So yesterday we had, what's today? Today's Monday. So yesterday I knew that. I was just checking to see if you were paying attention.
Yeah, I am.
The business that they drive, every time we were on, people come from the craziest places. We had some people from Nashua, New Hampshire yesterday. We had some people from Braintree. And, you know, I get talking to them because they want to see the owner. And, hey, I saw you on TV this morning or whatever. And there are a lot of people that watch the show in the morning and will go out that afternoon to whatever restaurant that they've seen. And they do a great job. We had a guy yesterday from Nashua who wanted to see me. My daughter called me. I just left. I had to go back. And the guy really wanted to know if I was a beekeeper. So,
and you are.
Yeah. And we are. I mean, you can attest to that.
Yes. I can attest.
An award-winning.
Award-winning show. You must be. We're about a month off from you.
Yeah, we are.
The bees arrived from the apiary, right?
End of April.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
good
times. It's been good. So, we have, what, 5 minutes left in my segment?
Yeah, about that, yep.
So, I got to bring something else up.
All right, bring it up.
So, your next guest is a Whitman boy. Well, he's no boy, but yes. Rich McKinnon, who is the president of PFFM.
Yep.
Who, you have really good people coming in here from Whitman, I must say. So, Rich, who is a Whitman firefighter,
yep,
and the president of Professional Firefighters, also has not one, but two daughters on the Whitman Hanson Regional High School basketball team.
They're in the semifinals right now.
Who, by the way, won their game Wednesday night?
Friday night.
Oh, the next game is Wednesday night. So, I don't steal your thunder, but can we introduce the next guest now so he can tell us about the basketball team?
Sure.
All right, Rich, take it away.
Thank you, Rich. No, it's a pleasure to be here.
A touchy between two Riches.
Absolutely.
I was going to say between something that does.
No, I do. I'm fortunate to do a lot of things, be a firefighter, be president of the PFFM. But one of the greatest things is watching this past season my two daughters, Rosalie and Lily, and that team is just amazing. They're only two players that make up that full team that... to see where they've come this season to where they are now is just, it's very proud, and it's really amazing to watch every game.
What's interesting is that Whitman Hanson, the Panthers, usually when we're talking this time of year, we're usually talking about the boys' basketball team.
Yeah, this is the girls' team, and they are...
Coach Rogers.
They're just amazing.
Isn't this the first time in history that the girls' basketball have made it this far?
I believe it is. I believe they haven't. So they won the Patriot League, and I believe the last time they did that was back in 2009.
Mm.
But to my knowledge, this is the furthest that they've ever come in the tournament.
Now, your girls didn't have to be on the soccer team, too, did they?
They were not. They play field hockey, and they play lacrosse. They're great athletes and great students and very fortunate.
Yeah, so you got one of them that's going to be graduating out?
I do. Rosie's a senior. She's going to be graduating, and Lily is a freshman, so we have another 3 years of sports to watch, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, so you're going to be coming up in just a couple of moments, and we're going to chat with you more in regards to what's going on. Now, I don't know if you want to dovetail off of what you were talking about, the pandemic, being somebody who is, you know, a firefighter, somebody who you talk to your brothers and sisters in the fire service across the Commonwealth, and probably to folks around the country when it comes to firefighting and all the issues. What's your thoughts about COVID? I mean, is it still something that's prevalent, or the issue we're going to talk about in a few minutes that's more of a bigger call to action?
It is. As far as the pandemic and COVID, we have to be cautiously optimistic, which we are. It's still something that's there, and, you know, our firefighters are exposed to it every day, more so than maybe the normal citizen. But it's definitely something that we're seeing on the rebound, and things are opening up, which we're happy for. If I could throw a shout out to Richie Rosen, big supporter of us and Whitman as the firefighters when things were shut down, we were still working. Our call volume increased, and typically we like to cook in the firehouse, but sometimes if things get busy, it just doesn't allow for us to actually go out and shop and cook. So we rely on local restaurants, and especially McWiggins in the patio for takeout at times, and he's always there to support us.
So if you were to take a moment right now, who would you say is the go-to cook or chef at the Whitman Fire Department? And who's the one last person that you won't even let in the area to even make cookies?
Cookies is a tough situation. As far as the best, I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from myself. I do very well in the kitchen. I enjoy cooking. I actually worked yesterday 24 hours and made a nice dinner for everyone. We have a great crew, and we all get along well, and everyone does their part, and does their part to make living there and work in there a very special place.
So you don't want to name.
Let me tell
anybody.
You, if that wasn't the best non-answer you've ever
it was
heard.
Very,
he's a true politician.
He was very diplomatic.
He's a very diplomatic.
Super diplomatic. I thought he was going to mention like Stevie Foster. Or,
yeah. No, they're all good.
Okay.
They're all
he good. Didn't get to the position he's in because he's stupid.
All right, so let's do this. Let's step aside just for a moment. It's going to conclude our number one. When we come back, we've already kind of teased you with our guest, Rich McKinnon, is going to be joining us. We're going to talk a little bit about legislation, what's going on in regards to their turnout here and how it's affecting them in just a few moments. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
WATD-FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
That truck, it pays?
What?
The bumper sticker on that truck says it pays.
Pays? Pays what?
I can't quite read it. Oh, it pays to stay way back.
Ah, what was that?
The truck snapped back a rock. Now I've got a broken windshield.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
This Luck of the Irish moment is sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. 10 years ago, Kayla Greer was riding the bus at 5 a.m. to culinary school. A friend in the music business knew she could cook and set her up last minute to cater a big party for a big rapper. And now she's a celebrity chef.
It was so crazy. I just got a call. They're like, are you available?
Yeah.
They're like, okay, it's for Drake. I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'm available.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Last year, to mark its 100th birthday, Lowe's completed 100 impact projects in communities across the United States as part of 100 Hometowns, benefiting more than a million Americans. Lowe's is now making its largest ever commitment to give back to the communities it serves. Over the next 5 years, Lowe's will invest $100 million in community impact projects, supporting nearly 2,000 communities each year. Take part. Nominate your hometown project in need by March 28th. Visit Lowe's.com/hometowns to learn more or follow us at hashtag Lowe's Hometowns.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, we're back. Hour number two later this hour. I'll give you a little tease. Dave Wedge, best-selling author, going to be here to talk about his new book, Writing with Evil. It's coming up just about 30 minutes. But right now, we're going to talk a little bit with Rich McKinnon. As I introduced, he's the president of the Professional Firefighters of Massachusetts. Also joining us in a moment on the line is State Representative James Hawkins. And we're going to talk a little bit about House Bill 2475, where that stands. We'll start with you, Rich, and if you will, kind of talk to us about the issue at hand in regards to the gear that all your brothers and sisters in the fire service wear, and what's the main issue with it these days?
Sure, Kevin. Again, thank you for having me here discussing this important issue with our firefighters and their safety. So over the past 10 or 15 years, we've really made it a priority to address the epidemic that's within the fire service, and that's occupational cancer among our firefighters and first responders. And we've done our part to you know, increase the scans and testing of our members so we can have early detection. We've really changed the culture of the fire service where we wash our gear every time we use it after an incident. The state's been great with providing funding, so we're able to put washers and dryers, commercial washers and dryers, in our firehouses across the state. We've filed other legislation and passed other legislation to add to our cancer presumptives and our cancer benefits across the state. But our recent fight is some studies that we've done through the International Association of Firefighters, where we've discovered that these PFAs are heavily saturated in our turnout gear and is one of the causes as to the high rate of cancer in our firefighters, not only here on the South Shore, but across the country and in Canada. So we're working with our legislators now to ban these PFAs from being put in our turnout gear that we put on at every call. Every time we go out the door and respond to an incident, we don't know what we're walking into, so we don our gear. We've made great strides in the breathing apparatus that we wear, but now we're finding that the gear that we put on, you know, numerous times every day, is highly saturated with these PFAs that are known toxic and cause cancers, is in our gear. So the crusade now is to ban these PFAs from our turnout gear and come up with alternatives that we can wear. And it's a struggle. It's a fight. The lobby for the chemical companies and for some of the industry folks that produce this gear, we need standards changed. The standards are put together by the NFPA, so we have to change the standard. That's a long, tedious process as well. But we're in the fight, and, you know, no one has patience for cancer, and the firefighters certainly don't right now.
Mr. Rosen, would you like to ask a question?
Yeah. So, Richie, two things. One, isn't there some, like, crazy number?
Talking to the microphone.
Oh, isn't there some crazy number of firefighters that have passed because of cancer?
It is. So right now, 1 in 3 firefighters, about 33% of us, will come down with some type of cancer. And I can tell you in Whitman, which is a smaller department, I've been on 26 years now. And I did the numbers today just on the guys that I have worked with over the years. It's been 7 that have had some types of cancer. Some have died. Some have had to retire. Some, luckily, have been treated. And the ages are, it's not just the member that's been on 30-plus years. We've had members on 6 and 7 years that come down with thyroid cancer, that come down with testicular cancer, that come down with skin cancer. And, again, a large part of it we feel, and we now have the proof that it's because of the gear that we're wearing.
So that stuff that's on the gear, is it on there because it's fire retardant? Is that what the issue is?
It's not fire retardant. It's more for, so we've done, the turnout gear has 3 layers. It's the outer shell, which we've been able to get the PFAs out of the outer shell. The trouble now is the inner shell. And the inner shell contains a thermal barrier, which is obviously against the heat, and then a moisture barrier from, the water repellent and things like that as we fight fires and obviously come in contact with chemicals and other exposures. So the inner shell now is what we're working for to ban the PFAs, moving forward.
Again, you were speaking with Rich McKinnon. He's the president of PFFM. And joining us on the line, we'll bring in now a state representative, James Hawkins. Representative, welcome to the conversation, sir.
Thank you for inviting me.
How did you get involved in regards with this legislation? Give us the background and the details on getting involved on House Bill number 2475.
I was horrified at how many funerals I went to for firefighters who weren't that old. I mean, you think about this. This isn't exactly a couch potato type job. These are active people with outdoor jobs. You would think they would outlive the rest of us. And it was always cancer, and it was always people that were way too young. So I was honored when they asked me to file this bill. To think that this is on brand new gear that they put on when it's brand new. It's not like they've accumulated these toxic chemicals over time with use. This was in the gear when it's brand new and they put it on. That's just not acceptable.
Now this is this bill that I read. This is for this session, but this isn't this isn't a first filing, is it?
No, last session was kind of weird with COVID. We pretty much only dealt with COVID-related issues. So a whole lot of legislation, unless it was crisis, didn't get done, which makes it a little harder this session because we've got double the work. But that's why it didn't go through last time. I don't think it had anything to do with the bill. This time, it got released favorably and is going to be most likely included in an omnibus bill with other PFAS type legislation for other categories, which is where it is right now.
So basically what you're saying is this is going to be bundled. It's going to be bundled with another piece of legislation.
Or with several other pieces of legislation, which is better for... it was complicated. I can't imagine how the staff does all this because they were not all in the same committee. So to go through the process through several different committees and get it together into one package was quite a bit of work for the staff, but that's where it is right now, and they're working on that now. I don't know if there's an exact timeline on it, but in terms of strategy, it's more likely to pass that way than a single standalone bill. We don't pass a lot of standalone bills. Usually they're combined with other similar bills, so this is good news.
And is it good news that at least, you know, here we are, we're in the second half of the legislative session, and it's early on, so this and it seems as though it's made some remarkable strides to be at least be considered to be packaged with other legislation that's going to be signed into law.
Absolutely. This is good news. I don't remember, but we had a gazillion other legislators sign on to this as co-sponsors. It's a very popular bill. People recognize that this is a real problem. We can't let this continue.
And so, what will this legislation ultimately do? Is there any teeth to this legislation? Is there something that can be done, or is it just basically saying that this gear cannot be sold to fire departments around the Commonwealth?
First phase, and I'm not at my desk, so I'm not looking at it. I think by 2023 it has to be labeled that it contains these chemicals, and by 2025 they can't continue to sell it with those chemicals in it.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, is there a possibility that there could be future legislation that would ultimately... is this the only chemical that we're seeing is just with the PFAS with the fire department gear, or has it been noticed in any other gear besides our first responders?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I think there's issues with toxins and other things besides the turnout gear. The fire stations is an issue. It's elsewhere. Everything they're near, after going to an incident, they're suffering the risk of chemicals, including PFAS chemicals.
So
I'm not the scientist, so I can't tell you where else this is. But it's a forever chemical. I mean, it's in everyday things that we use. It's in running gear. It's in waterproof shoes. It's in the fry pan you use. It's in a whole lot of other normal everyday items.
So I would ask you. I'm going to ask you, Rich, and that is that. So this is great that this legislation is moving along, and it has hope to.
I'll interrupt you. I'll interrupt you. One of the other issues is in drinking water now. A lot of water systems in different communities have been contaminated with PFAS chemicals. This is bad, not for a whole long list of reasons. I think the most crazy is to see a firefighter suffering from cancer because of it, but it's a widespread problem. Sorry for interrupting.
No, you're 100% correct, because there are communities that these days that are measuring the PFAS levels to see where they're at, and they have community members who are asking, like, what is this, and why are we dealing with this, and what are the ramifications of if the levels spike?
That's why it's good to be combined with other PFAS legislation. It was the PFAS Task Force is the name of the group that's working on it. So it was put together with several different committees. It's a serious effort on behalf of the legislature.
Well, Rich, I would ask you, so now we have the legislation that's in the works. What do you know as far as some of the firefighters around the Commonwealth? Are there there are lawsuits being filed now against companies that have sold this gear?
So I am aware of one recent lawsuit that I believe 8 to 10 members that were formerly firefighters that are now out on disability did gather together and file a lawsuit against the manufacturers. The PFFM as a whole doesn't have any interest in that. Obviously, we have a very deep interest in our members and their health and safety. But I am aware of that lawsuit. I don't know the merits of it. There is obviously merits and science there that there's a good chance that those firefighters got cancer from the gear in the years of exposure, wearing that gear, and doing their job every day.
Representative, anything you want to say in closing?
No, thank you for giving this some publicity. It's been a big issue, certainly in my office for the last 2 years. So I'm glad to finally get something done and to let people know that we're actually doing something about it.
Rich.
Hey, Rep, I just want to say thank you for everything you do up there on the Hill for us and the firefighters across Massachusetts. You've been a great partner for us and taking this on along with, on the Senate side, we have the Senate bill, Senator Diana DiZoglio as well, for championing this legislation, and we're hoping by the end of the session that this legislation gets passed. Thanks again, Rep. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That is State Representative James Hawkins, representing the 2nd Bristol District. He was just joining us, so we'll continue our conversation now with Mr. McKinnon. What are some of the other things that you have in the works for PFFM? What are some of the things that your organization is doing that needs to be discussed right now?
Sure. So we've also taken a big priority in firefighter behavioral health and dealing with some of the PTSD issues that our firefighters face every day. We've done very well with providing care for our members that need it and getting them placed in the right care facility and dealing with any type of behavioral health issues that we do have another piece of legislation, PTSD legislation, that if a firefighter was disabled due to PTSD and the terrific trauma that they've seen throughout their career, after treatment can no longer go on, and they realize that they, you know, physically and emotionally cannot come back to work, that they would be taken care of, and that would be seen as an on-the-job disability.
So I would ask you this, is it being taken seriously, PTSD, when it comes to first responders, firefighters?
I can tell you that the firefighters as a whole are taking it very seriously. Mental health as a whole right now is being taken care of seriously throughout the state, both in our legislature and even with our fire chiefs and management. Quite frankly, they've been great in partnering with this and working with us and recognizing that this is a big problem in the fire service. And I think you see in the general public at coming out of COVID that behavioral health and some of the behavioral issues that we're seeing, it's not just firefighters, it's everywhere. But you know, firefighters do see an increased risk of incidents that can cause PTSD, and it's well documented, well studied, and well diagnosed right now.
I know you're somebody who watches what happens politically, and this is an election year. What are you watching for this year? And is this a time to seize the moment when it comes to key issues when you're representing your brother and sister firefighters?
It absolutely is. I like to see and think the PFFM is being very strong and involved in politics. That's how we get things done. These laws is how we protect our firefighters, how we protect our benefits, how we protect our health and safety. We will be very active in campaigns coming up and elections coming up with our core values that we as a union, we want a seat at the table. We believe in collective bargaining. We believe in fair health care and pensions and the health and safety of our members. And again, we want to be part of every conversation that has an effect on our members, and we're very effective in doing that. I'm very proud of our 12,000 plus members across Massachusetts every day, no matter what the conditions. I never thought in my career I'd work under the conditions of COVID or have to deal with some of the other political and other issues with COVID in a pandemic. But as always, our members step up. They don't ask questions, and we, you know, we're there to take care of them.
Now, is there a national conference that you find yourself attending, or is there going to be one that's scheduled this year that you're looking forward to that usually you can glean some information and bring back to the Commonwealth?
Absolutely. So this past January, we had our first in-person conference, the leadership conference and educational conference down in Florida with our international brothers and sisters from across U.S. and Canada. We just come back last weekend. We were in D.C. for our legislative conference where we were on the Hill and met with many of our federal delegation here from Massachusetts, which they're very supportive of our firefighter issues. We were able to give them our priority legislation that we're looking to do at the federal level. And again, we have a great delegation here in Massachusetts that support us. And then in Ottawa, we are traveling to, in August, we're traveling to Ottawa for the International Convention, which is every 2 years. And we're fortunate here in Massachusetts. We have one of our own, Ed Kelly, who's a Boston firefighter, still works on Ladder 17 in Boston, Dorchester kid, who came up through the ranks in the union, had my position previously as the president of the PFFM, is now the general president of the International Association of Firefighters, which represents over 326,000 firefighters, paramedics, and EMTs across U.S. and Canada. Came from, right here in Massachusetts. So we're fortunate to have his leadership and have that relationship. And quite frankly, I can pick up the phone now and call him and get what I need.
Do you have any follow-up questions?
Rich, can we go back to the turnout gear? So now that you know that it's causing an issue, do you guys still have to wear that stuff, or is there an alternative?
We do still have to wear it. It's a vital part of our job in protecting the communities that we took an oath to protect. We do have to wear it. I will tell you that we have done an aggressive educational campaign in the PFFM that to limit when we wear it. So we only wear it on emergency calls where, you might have saw us before do stair climbs and do other community events. And so we're really trying to educate our members to only wear it when you need to responding. So any of those other PR things and fun things we used to do with turnout gear, we don't do anymore. We just had our Be Fit Challenge where we did the stair climb in the garden. And, overwhelmingly, we said we're not going to wear a gear or something like that anymore. The manufacturers are working on alternatives, and we're working closely with them. I don't think anyone is out there saying, let's put this stuff in to kill firefighters, but unfortunately, that's what's happening.
So the thing I would ask, and that is how trusting could you be of the next iteration of turnout gear? Will it be in the back of your head? Will it be in the back of the head of, the thousands of firefighters who don the gear when they need to go in and rescue somebody or put out a fire, do whatever it does, whatever it is that you do as a first responder?
Well, that's one of the reasons why it's going to take a little time to get this alternative gear, is it has to be tested, both not only to the temperatures that we face, but also the wear and tear on it, how long. Typically, a set of turnout gear is only good for 10 years, if that, and they say you need to replace that gear. We advocated very strongly for two sets of turnout gear for every firefighter, so that when we come back from a call, we can wash it, and we have another set of gear that we can respond to while the washing process takes place. So it's a very big issue. We think there will be a fix, but again, it's gonna take a time. It's gonna take some time to change the standard through the NFPA. That's a long process that we're on top of. It's very industry driven, some of those NFPA committees, but we're a very strong union, and we'll be there advocating for our members as always.
How long have you been the president of the PFFM?
In my fifth year now. Prior to that, I was a District 1 vice president. We have 8 district vice presidents across the state. My district ran from Quincy all the way down to Plymouth, over to the Bridgewaters and Easton. I had 32 locals in my district. And then when I said President Kelly was elected to the international president. I threw my hat in the ring for that election as well.
Talk to me about the pride of serving as the head of this organization.
It's a great honor. It's a great opportunity. I love every second of it. There's good times, there's bad times, but even in the bad times, we have a great crew on my executive board. We have a great crew of firefighters that rally around each other in the bad times, and you know the good times are the good times. I always wanted to be a firefighter. I'm a third generation firefighter. It's the only thing I've ever really wanted to do. I knew at a very young age that's what I wanted to do.
You know, some folks want to become lawyers, some want to be police officers. What is it about being a firefighter that's ultimately different than in any of those other careers?
It's absolutely the firefighters that you live with and work with day in and day out. It's an identity. It's not employment. It's an identity. It's a culture. It's a lifestyle. You know, it's not you go in 8 hours work with someone. We're there. I just got off for 48. I was there Saturday and Sunday, 48 hours. So you're living with this group for 48 hours. And it's like it's a family. And like any family, there's dysfunction in some families at times. But, you know, we have our issues. But ultimately, when that bell rings, I know they'll all be there for me. And it's an unbelievable profession.
What would you say has been to date some of you and the PFM's most memorable accomplishments under your leadership?
I was very proud that we were able to pass legislation. So we had a cancer presumptive that was a retirement benefit passed in the 80s, which if you got cancer and had to retire, it was presumed you got it on the job. The issue was, if you got cancer on the job, it wasn't seen as a on-the-job injury or, you know, line-of-duty injury. So we have what's called 111F, which is a firefighter injured on duty. And a lot of cities and towns didn't recognize that as a line-of-duty injury, so the person had to use their own sick time, their own health insurance. And we had cases. We had a case in Plymouth, Tony Colarusso, where he burned up all his sick time. They took him off payroll. They took him off health insurance. When he needed it most, he was on hospice. And he ended up dying of his cancer because he was waiting for that disability pension to be to go through the process. Sometimes that can take months. So under Governor Baker and Speaker DeLeo, we were able to pass legislation that recognizes that as an on-the-job injury. So just like if I fall off a roof and break my leg, that's an on-the-job injury. If I get cancer, that's now an on-the-job injury. So I don't have to use my own sick time. The city helps with insurance and care for my cancer. So it was a very vital, big piece of legislation that we were able to pass.
Sounds familiar to a conversation you and I had in regards to COVID and getting coverage for that and the rigors that you had to go through in order to get the state to recognize that, you know, if you get this on the job, that, you know, you need coverage.
Well, we still don't have that at the state level.
Right. But that was still a conversation you were having.
It absolutely was, and I'm still, you know, willing and able to have that conversation.
Fighting that fight.
We still have firefighters sick with COVID. I will say, and I said it back then, that the cities and towns did a great job stepping up locally and taking care of our firefighters and putting together some type of agreement to handle COVID sickness and time off and quarantine time and things like that. But to date, there's still no statewide coverage for firefighters that get COVID.
Anything you want to say as we wrap up this segment?
No, just that, you know, I'm fortunate to be in the position I am representing the best firefighters in the country. Very proud of my two daughters, Rosie and Lily, and go Panthers on Wednesday.
Yeah, that should be a fantastic time.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
And if folks want to find out more about the professional firefighters of Massachusetts, how can they do that?
They can go to our website, pffm.org, and they can also, we're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in. You and I have done several segments, and I enjoy the conversation and the education that you provide to not only myself, but my listeners.
Thanks again for giving us the opportunity. We appreciate it.
You got it. Richard, anything you want to say?
I just want to say thank you to Rich and all the firefighters and first responders for what they do, because it's something I would never do. They do an amazing job.
We're going to step aside, and when we come back, the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Dave Wedge, talk about his new book.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned every Saturday for JT Talk.
This is Juliana Tashier, inviting you to join us every Saturday after the news at noon. From the North Shore to the South Shore, we share 50 years of experience educating consumers to make the most informed real estate decisions.
JT Talk, this Saturday after the news at noon on 95.9 WATD.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back as we anticipate our guest, Dave Wedge, hopefully be joining us shortly as we're going to talk a little bit about his new book. I think, though, right out of the gate, quickly, we're probably going to, I want to ask him in regards to Tom Brady, the whole idea of Tom Brady. You know, I still have Richard Rosen here. I'm going to probably keep him here for another moment or two. I don't know if it's going to make your Sundays any better with Tom Brady announcing 40 days after he retired that he's coming back.
You know what's amazing is that people think that restaurants and bars are busy when it's football games. I know a lot of restaurants that close 2 days a year, Christmas and Super Bowl Sunday, because nobody goes out for football games. I mean, yeah, during the season you might have a few, but it's not that great for business.
You know, Lisa?
I know so. The number of restaurants that I know of close on Super Bowl Sunday because people stay home or they have parties.
Is it that bad?
Yeah.
Yeah, but what about the different specials you have? No, I mean, during the football season.
No, they're great, but the fact of the matter is it's great to see Tom Brady come back.
So, as I mentioned, he and Casey wrote the Redemption book about Tom Brady and Deflategate, and it's just kind of interesting. It's one of those things that I say to myself here, it's like, you know, this guy's coming back, and, you know, I had Dave on a couple of weeks ago, and we were actually talking about that. We were teasing the fact. Actually, Dave had called in. We had teased the fact of that here's Tom, who, you know, decided to retire. Nobody thought he was going to retire. But then, you know, talking about all the issues that he had went through during Deflategate. It was kind of an interesting read, an interesting book, and to hear the details behind the particular book itself. And again, like I said, I'd like to get his take, knowing that, you know, we just get this announcement as the start of free agency for the NFL happens to take place. It's, you know, it's interesting knowing that our teams right now can talk to free agents and kind of, you know, gauge, and then, you know, Tom Brady comes out of the woodwork over the weekend.
So didn't Brady fly over to England with the owners of Tampa Bay to go see
some soccer match?
Yeah. I wonder what the discussion in the plane was and how much they offered him to come back.
You think that's what it is?
Well, he saw Rodgers get a $200 million contract for 4 years. I mean, it's got to be something.
Well, is it a matter of unfinished business?
How much unfinished business can a guy that's won all those Super Bowls have?
But you're talking about a guy who he brought the team all the way. They were down. He brought them all the way back, only to have to lose in the final minutes.
It's possible.
Just texting now. He's almost here now. So
I would like to know what he's getting for 1 year.
Well, he was still under contract. Don't forget he had.
Oh, that's right too. Yeah.
He's still under contract, but you know, there's been a lot of hemming and hawing about the fact that was he happy in Tampa Bay? You know, did he want to go? I mean, because the rumor until the news this weekend was that is he coming back? He's not really retired, and well, does he want to play for San Francisco?
So that's what I was going to talk about. Was, you know, everything you heard was that if he comes back, he's going to San Francisco.
They have two quarterbacks.
Yeah, well,
they have two. I believe they have two quarterbacks under contract.
Yeah,
Jimmy Garoppolo, who unfortunately seems as though he can't get the job done.
Right,
and then you have Trey Lance, a kid that you drafted.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, again, kid's young in his development, but, you know, 49ers have been successful. They have a good record, a good winning percentage. I don't have the number in front of me at this moment because we're just vamping for a couple of moments here, talking about the possibilities of Tom Brady and what's going on. And, you know, it's an interesting sport. And, again, knowing that Dave's going to be joining us, just a little bit of a tease in regards to his new book.
But wait, the Patriots aren't playing Tampa this year.
No. I went to that game. I went to that game and was, you know, I was rattled when the Nick Folk kicked the ball and it banged off of. I was seated down at that end zone and it rattled off the goalpost. Like, you know, it's. They held him to, you know, the kept him close until the last minute. And, you know, it would have been damning to beat him in the final seconds with a field goal from some 50 yards away.
But I know.
Instead, he just bangs it off the side of the post and kicks out. But, no, Dave's wed. Dave's going to be here in just a moment. But we'll talk about, come on in. He's stretching. We have business before we talk about the new book.
Go.
Knowing that you were on the phone line a couple of weeks ago. As we had
Hey, Kevin. Good afternoon. Good evening. How are you, sir?
This is Richie.
Richie, how are you, sir?
He owns McGuigan's Pub.
Great place.
Patio. And we're kind of teasing the fact that, you know, you wrote the book about Tom Brady. Redemption. Before we talk about riding with evil, and I think Richard wants to hear this as well.
Sure.
What are your thoughts about him coming back?
So it's, you know, someone posted today that you know, if you want a masterclass in you know, kind of how to manipulate the press, it's Tom Brady, you know. But I'm not that surprised. You know, you want my true take is I think he wants to embarrass Aaron Rodgers one more time. I do. That's not a joke. That's really what I think. I think he was waiting to see what Rodgers was going to do. Rodgers signed a 4-year deal. For all that money.
$200 million.
Yeah, and I think Brady was like, I'm going to go smoke this guy again. That's what I think.
Well, here's the crazy thing is that 2 years in a row, Aaron Rodgers, even though he couldn't get it done, was your MVP, the league MVP.
Again. I know. It's maddening, you know, but I think Brady looks at things like that, and, you know, what I know from writing that book and the small amount of time that I did get to spend with Brady and people that know him very well, and, you know, I think that Brady does, as he got older, he started to take that stuff more to heart.
Mm.
When he was younger, he didn't care because he was like, you know, 28, 29. He was winning Super Bowls. He didn't really care. Belichick had him buying into, like, individual records don't matter. None of this matters. It's just about winning, win, 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 win. As he got older and he kept winning, 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 and now he's got 4 Super Bowls, 5 Super Bowls, 6 Super Bowls. I think he started to look at his own legacy.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know what? I am the best. And I think he knows he's the best. And I think he wants to preserve that as being the best. So I think that's what this is all about. I think it's not about ego. It's really not. It's about standing up for yourself. And it's about Tom Brady saying, you know what? I can still crush this league. That's what it's about. And that's what I think he's going
to
do.
You sure it's not that he was hoping last year to do what Peyton Manning did, and that is, even though Peyton Manning had a rubber arm in Super Bowl 50, it was the defense that won that Super Bowl. It wasn't necessarily, I mean, he played a role
in
it.
You could say that with the 2018 Patriots, that he rode that defense. Yeah. But remember, why did they win that game? Because he hit Gronk with that bomb.
Damn straight.
That's why. And I think with the Bucs, that first Super Bowl that he won, it was a combination. He had a great defense, but he also had a great offense, and he lit it up. I think he sees what's going on with that team again. And if you look at the Tampa roster, they've reloaded again. He knows they can win the Super Bowl again. He knows that. Mm. He knows it. I would be shocked, and I will come back, and I will eat my hat if this happens. There's zero chance that Tom Brady comes back weak. Like, weak arm, underthrowing balls, throwing interceptions. I just don't... That's not going to happen. He knows his body too well, and he's seen Elway and Marino and Favre and
Manning. The drop-off.
He's seen these great guys in the drop-off. He knows he hasn't dropped off. He knows. He looks at Mahomes. He looks at Russell Wilson. He looks at these other quarterbacks. He knows he's better than them. He's still better than them.
It's funny you say that, because the thing that I think about is you just saw Russell. You mentioned Russell Wilson. I mean, he just moved over to the AFC.
Huge.
Right? It's like, oh, that's one less slinger I got to go up against. Yeah. You know, and I'm not afraid of Drew Lock if I have to go to Seattle.
Right,
I'm not.
Right. Do you think Tom Brady's afraid of Stafford?
No.
You know what I mean? Like,
no.
Like, Stafford just won the Super Bowl, but, like, Aaron Donald won that Super Bowl. You know what I mean? That's who won that Super Bowl. Stafford did a great job, but he was like a, you know, he was a Phil Simms. He was a, you know, he's an Eli Manning. He was a quarterback that got it. Trent
Eli
Dilfer.
Manning.
He was a quarterback that got it done. Good quarterback. Never great. And I think Tom Brady knows that, like, with his talent, he'll get it done.
Yes, Richard. Do you want to get into the meat and potatoes of this?
Well, you know, I read this promo.
Okay.
And I'm really intrigued by the book he has written.
Okay.
We have a long time to talk about Tom Brady.
Sure, sure.
We only have 20 minutes to talk about this book, which looks wicked exciting.
Okay.
So can we just get to the book?
We can. And I want to make sure I tell them, I didn't buy or pre-order the book. I'm more of an audiobook guy, so I've already pre-ordered the audiobook.
You know, it's funny though. I was talking to my publisher today. So the book is called Riding with Evil,
yes.
Taking Down the Notorious Pagan Motorcycle Gang. Comes out tomorrow. Kevin, you got the first interview that before the book comes out.
Nice.
I got a busy day tomorrow, as you might imagine.
Yes.
But you know, I was talking to my publisher earlier today about the audiobook thing, and thank you, and how that works. So Audible, which is a brand now, is owned by Amazon. So if you have a certain Amazon subscription, if you have Amazon Prime, you get most of the Audible content. So I would encourage people, if you are into the audiobooks, to just, if you got an Amazon Prime account, go on Audible and just listen to the book.
I'm kind of shocked that Dave didn't bring, you know, a couple of autographed copies for us.
You know,
but other than that, you know, it's okay.
Well, first of all, I was ambushed by you. I didn't know you were here. But second of all, I don't have any yet because it comes out tomorrow. But Kevin knows that I will sign his book, of course, and the same with you. And I'd be happy to come into McGuigan some night and do a signing and do an event, and we can have
wow.
We.
Wow! Did you see that?
I'm
down for that.
Hopefully, no pagans will show up.
I'm down for the book signing.
So if you will, give us a summary of this book for the listeners, if you will.
Sure. So it's the story about a guy named Ken Croak, who was a Boston ATF agent, and he worked down in the Southeastern Mass office down in Bridgewater. Mm. And Ken had a long history of doing undercover work. He was stationed out in L.A. for a long time, where he did some undercover work on a bunch of different, you know, street gangs. He worked on a case involving the Mongols, a famous case in L.A. where the Mongols were infiltrated and they took down like 30 or 40 guys in a federal racketeering case. So Ken, you know, continues his career. He winds up in Boston, and then one day he has a chance meeting with a guy from the Devil's Disciples. You know, as you do as an ATF agent, you just happen to run into a Devil's Disciple. So,
yeah, just happen to run into him.
So he has a, you know, he looks the part. He's got a goatee. He's a big giant dude with a bald head and all that. So he, you know, gets to talking to the guy, and he's like, listen, you know, you want to get into this? Because I think I got an in for you. The Pagans want to kind of make a move up in Massachusetts. They want to open a chapter. We'll look at the guys. You look like you could do it. Long story short, Ken reports back to his superiors and says what's going on. They said, why don't you play it out and see what happens? And now Ken, at this point, is at the end of his career. He's, 40 years old, and he's got three young girls at home and a wife who just retired from the ATF. So he's ready to, like, kind of ride off into the sunset. He doesn't want to get into a long-term undercover situation, but the case just kept growing, and Ken kept getting doors open for him, and he's now, 41, 42, and he's, he looks the part, and the bikers like him. He's a tough dude. He's a big guy. Goes down and meets the Pagans, and they basically open the door for him to join the gang. So the book is really about how he was able to survive that hazing, for lack of a better term, ritual that they do. It's called prospecting, and it makes college hazing look like, kindergarten.
Right.
It's really, really violent stuff. It's really dark stuff. And Ken was able to just survive it, keep his sanity intact, keep his family together, got into the gang, became patched in. And they built the case from there, and it ended up being a 2-year infiltration where Ken led a double life, living with the Pagans, rarely seeing his family, going months at a time without seeing his family, and living this life as a biker, patched in Pagan, and ended up taking down over 20 Pagans, one of the most violent gangs in America, and it was a federal racketeering case, just like they make against the mob, a RICO case. So it's quite a story, but it's really, a lot of people, they're putting it in the true crime genre, but it's a psychological thriller. It's really Ken's journey through his own mind of how to keep his life together with all this stuff going on that I just described.
How long ago did this actually happen?
So the case started in, 2009 is when it started, and the indictments came down in 2011. So it was about a 2-year case. Ken, he retired a few years ago, and he never told the story. And it's funny, the way that we met was through a mutual friend in the ATF who said, you got to meet Ken. He's got a great story, this guy Ken. And I kind of knew who he was. We had played hockey together, and when he described him, I was like, oh, I remember that guy. So went and got a coffee with him. Down in Middleborough, and we were sitting there having coffee, and Kevin, as a journalist and a media guy, that everyone's like, oh, everyone's got a story. Hey, meet this guy; he's got a great story. And that one time you don't take that meeting is the time that you miss a great story.
Yes.
So I'm glad I went that day, because I sat there, got myself an iced coffee, sat down across from Ken. He started talking, and my jaw was on the floor in 5 minutes. I was like, this guy's got a story. And we've been working together ever since.
The description is Sons of Anarchy. When you said RICO, I thought of Sons of Anarchy. So that kind of just popped. Meets the Departed. I was thinking a little older than that. I was thinking, remember the movie Stone Cold with Brian Bosworth?
Well, I do, and I had the haircut to go with
it.
Did
you really?
That was high school. I had the lines,
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it is a true, there's a lot of intrigue here, and the thing that really makes the story work is it's not just a story of a guy who goes undercover. It's a story about his family. It's a story about his battles with the internal forces at the ATF, which is a federal agency, which is a very buttoned-up place where there's no gray area in the federal government. It's black or white. And Ken had to kind of negotiate that, because in the undercover world, there is a gray area.
Yeah.
There's a gray area. And Ken had to kind of figure out, the lines of where he was not crossing them and not crossing over into places that would jeopardize the case, or on the other side, jeopardize his own safety. So he was constantly living in that gray area. And it is quite a story. It really is. And Ken is quite an impressive guy.
Did you want to ask a question, Richard?
How long did it take you to write this?
So I started working on it in about 2019, was when I had that first meeting for coffee. And Ken started talking, and the process of getting an actual, in my career now, this is my sixth book. It's, from the time you meet the person that you're like, all right, that's going to be my next book, it takes 5 or 6 months to get that book proposal done, which is about a 20-page document to get to the publisher or my agent in this case. My agent takes that, gives me some feedback, and then says, yeah, this is good, let's go, and boom, we got a book deal. And then once you get the book deal, the clock starts ticking. So it's about a year and a half. So it was a 2-year process. 2 years of my life that I wouldn't trade for anything, because it comes out tomorrow. I'm sitting here with you gentlemen talking about my work, and the next couple of weeks is what I'm going to be doing, is talking about this incredible story that I'm pretty lucky to be a part of.
But what folks don't realize, and maybe they do, and it's been a while since they heard it, is was this the only thing that you focused on? Were you, because you have so many different, like your partner Casey Sherman,
yeah.
You guys always have different projects that you are either working together, you're working by yourself, or maybe you have another a person that you're writing with as well.
Yeah, so it's funny, you know, you have this picture of an author in your head where they go and sit in a cabin in the woods and they write for 7 months, and
misery.
I think those days are over. You know, the book publishing world isn't what it used to be, where, you know, someone's going to pay me that much money to just go sit in the woods and do this. But that said, you know, I'm not complaining. I get paid for my work, but I do continue to do other projects. As you know, I do some work with the city of Brockton. The mayor's a great friend of mine. I do some work with Senator Nick Collins, who is a great friend of mine as well, helping him with the breakfast, which is next weekend. I help him with, like, writing his jokes and his speeches and helping with the media and all that stuff. And then I do have other, movie projects that Casey and I are constantly working on. And, you know, we had a great call today about some reality TV stuff that we've been working on. So you know me pretty well by now, Kevin. I've got several things in the works at all times. But over the past 2 years, my number one priority was this book, because I had to write it. I had a deadline. I had to make sure that I wrote the story and I wrote it well. And to be honest with you guys, you know, I'm very, very proud of it. It's my best work of my career.
What's it like to look back over your manuscript and then hand it over, your first draft, and have, I'm sure you got feedback from your publisher. They probably gave you high marks as well.
So it's funny. It's very, your anxiety goes through the roof after you hit send. You're like, all right, it's off.
Did I?
Well, it's more like, you know, what's going to come back? What are they going to think? You know, are they going to love it? Are they going to hate it? Are they going to think it's okay? They're going to completely change it? Are they going to say, you screw this up, we got to flip the whole story? You know, you just never know what's coming back. But in this case, the publisher that I worked with, HarperCollins, my editor is a guy named Matt Harper, no relation to D. Harper. But he's a great editor. He edited our book, Whitey Bulger, Hunting Whitey, which Casey and I did together. So I was happy to work with Matt again, because there was a level of comfortability there. But, you know, there was a stress level where you're like, you know, what's going to happen here? But when he came back, he was like, you guys have written a great book. And he had some changes, you know, but they were very minor. But ultimately, to be honest with you, Kevin, like, I get stressed out about my work, and I always want it to be up to my standards and exceed that. This one exceeded my standards by far. I don't even think I really fully understand what a great book I've written right here with Ken. He's got an amazing story, and he's a very amazing guy, very accomplished guy. And to be able to take all that information that he gave me and boil it down into a linear story and a narrative the way that we did, it was a great partnership, and we really, I think, you know, put together a hell of a story. So,
Richard, do you have a follow-up question?
I'm very intrigued by just reading this 3.5 or 4 paragraph promo thing that you did. It just sounds like an absolutely incredible story that that you got to read.
Yeah, so like Ken, you know, when Ken talks about it, he can talk about how he lived it, you know, and the things that he felt. And I don't want to answer those questions for him. I can give you some examples of some stuff that he went through. But for me as a writer, to be able to spend that much time with someone like him that is so tough and so accomplished and so confident and you know, has had these experiences that no one will ever experience. To be able to sit and have that access to someone like that and have them kind of bare their soul to me as a writer is a gift. You know, I was able to take that and tell the story. So, you know, like I said, it was a big challenge for me. And I actually felt like I didn't want to let Ken down. You know what I mean? Because it's his story. It's his life. I don't want to write a garbage story about a guy who, like, finally, after 11 years, decided to finally tell this story that was so personal to him. You know, he lived away from his family for 2 years. you know, barely saw his wife, barely saw his kids, probably had a lot of guilt about that, but he had this mission to take down these bad guys. So as a journalist, it's like, wow, you know, that I'm thankful that people like that exist, but as a writer, it was a challenge to not let him down, you know?
How much time did you actually spend with him?
I couldn't even begin to tell you.
I mean, it was a long time.
Hours, and I mean, you know, hundreds of hours.
Right.
You know, we traveled together. He took me up to New York. We saw the sites where all this case happened.
Wow.
We met in D.C. We met in New York City. And then we spent just, you know, endless hours on Zoom, because this all happened during COVID, too. So we did endless hours of Zoom and FaceTime, texting, emailing, phone calls. You know, hundreds of hours, you know.
Was there anything that he shared with you? Was there anything, was there something that sticks out in your mind that he shared with you, like you were just amazed or you shocked by the story, the parts of the story that he may have told you?
Yeah, there was a lot of things. I mean, pretty much every day. But, I mean, a couple things that stand out was, you know, when he was first prospecting for the gang, you know, as I told you, he was like, surprised to be in this situation. He didn't plan this. It wasn't like, let's go get the pagans. It kind of organically happened, yeah. You know? So all of a sudden, he finds himself down in the clubhouse of the chapter president. Well, I'm sorry, the vice president at the time. A guy who, you know, these guys got great names. One of the guys' names, his name's Roadblock. So he's at Roadblock's house in Long Island, you know, 2 days before, he's at his daughter's hockey game, you know, and hugging his wife and having a, you know, meatloaf dinner. And now he's down at Roadblock's house with a bunch of bikers, dirty, smelly, smoking crystal meth, doing cocaine, drinking beers, you know, prostitutes, the whole nine yards, just total depravity and disgusting. And he has to sleep on the floor. You know, and here he is, a, you know, 40-something-year-old, married, happily married guy, and now he's sleeping on a floor with a bunch of dirty bikers like he was in college again.
Right.
So that kind of struck me, that image in, of, you know, he's trying to fall asleep on the floor with, like, his jacket for a coat. And I remember back when I was in college, like, being, you know, a drunk, stupid college kid, like, that's just a dirty, weird feeling. And I can't imagine doing that at his age, at his career level, to go back to that and just, you know, trying to fall asleep. And this one, you know, this guy Roadblock was testing him, was walking around almost like a drill sergeant. Mm. And like Ken's trying to fall asleep on the floor with the coat covering him on the smelly, dirty Dorito beer covered floor, cigarettes. And Roadblock's thumping by him, looking at him, putting his face down near his to check to see if he's asleep. Almost like a drill sergeant, you know? So it was a test. And so, like, to hear Ken tell that story was pretty eye-opening to me.
This sounds as though this could have a possibility beyond a book. Has that, is that too early in the process to talk about, or is there consideration?
Never. No, never, no. We've been, you know, from day one, we think this is a movie or a series.
Absolutely.
It's, like I said, you know, just think about the story I just told you and
yeah.
Put that on celluloid. It's like, you know, you look at Breaking Bad. You know, Breaking Bad,
right?
Not, you know, all these shows, they're not like, it's not all shootouts and CGI
no.
and crazy. It's psychological drama. It's like, what would you do in this situation? And we have so much of that here. So we do actually have a movie offer on the table right now. We're kind of talking about it. You know, we have some other options going on. But I'm hopeful that we'll make this into something.
Folks want to get the book. How can they do that?
So Riding with Evil, Taking Down the Notorious Pagan Motorcycle Gang. I would encourage you to find your local bookseller. Buy it at your independent bookstore.
Very nice.
You know, Barnes & Noble is fairly independent. A lot of those run independent now. But if you have to, you can go to Amazon and find it there.
Excellent. Before I let you go, unless Richard has another question regarding the book.
If he does a movie, can we be in it as playing ourselves for the night before the book signing?
I think we're going to film a scene at McGuigan's.
Sweet.
You know, Massachusetts has the biggest film industry in the country outside of L.A. right now. So
doing well.
I think we have, if we're going to film it, it's got to be filmed here.
Funny enough, is parts of Don't Look Up were filmed in downtown Brockton.
At Brockton's crushing it in the films. They were, there was a film crew there the other day again for that show, Kevin Can Go F Himself.
Yep, yeah.
They're filming a second, it might be third season
yeah.
That they're filming in Brockton.
That's
so
crazy.
You know, there's a lot of filming going on, but we'd love to come to McGuigan's.
We'll have you there.
I hope you can clean, you know, fake blood off the walls.
Not a problem.
He doesn't do anything.
Hey, since we got the guy from McGuigan's here, we got to talk bar pie. Do we have 1 second?
Yeah. I was going to give you an opportunity to promote Saint Sinners and Serial
Killers. Oh, we can do that. We'll take a break.
But no, because we only got a couple of minutes left here. But go ahead, ask him your question before we.
Where does McGuigan's bar pie rank against the Cape Cod Cafe and Linwood? And I guess the other one I would put in there is Buddy's Union Villa.
So I believe that there Town was.
Spa.
There
I'm was, sorry, Poopsies as well.
Right Poopsies. Down the street. I think out of those four or five that we were in the top five.
Great.
There was actually a thing done by South Shore.
Byrne. He knows Kerry Byrne.
Yeah.
South Shore Bar Pizza.
Yeah, and I think we were like in the top five. Our bar pizza was really good.
What's your best bar pizza?
The best pizza?
Which flavor? Which one is
so
the best?
So, if I told you Shepherd's Pie Pizza is a killer.
It's pretty damn good.
I love that.
It's pretty damn good.
Good?
I would say that probably pepperoni.
Okay.
But Shepherd's Pie Pizza is amazing.
Yeah. Sprinkled with bacon is pretty good, too.
Love it.
Yeah. So.
Well, we'll have some the night that you come over for the book signing.
Sounds fantastic.
All right, final conversation that is tease folks about, I believe, April 20th?
April 20th. Well, Casey and I will come back in before that, but, you know, people should know Casey and I, our podcast called Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers, and you can find that on all podcast platforms. We are taking that podcast to the live stage. Our first show is at the Wilbur Theater. Casey and I don't do things small, so we probably should have started at a community theater and built up, but we said, let's go big or go home. We've got a cast of, a couple dozen people, and come out. It's wilburtheater.com and get tickets.
There he is, Dave Wedge. It's all the show that we have as you hear the music creeping up in the background. Till next week at 6:15 p.m. Have a great evening.
WATV FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton.